right. 17 of us preferring each other's company. I'll go around and say hello, starting with Katie and John G. I think there's more than one John. John G. Joan. Jim. Karen. Mark. Jeff. Sam. Marv. John in Texas. Shoketsu. Gaffel. Bob. Drew. Coral and or Carson. And Ruth Ann. Oh, all right. Well, tonight, let's see. Announcements, Sagaki's happening on Sunday in place of our usual chanting service. So that will be at 9:30. And it might go a little bit over. So if you usually show up for meditation at 10, we might still be in the middle of something, but it won't take much longer than that. And there will be information in the newsletter this week about how you might want to decorate your own altar in order to make it a Sagaki altar. And then we will, on the website, both in the event listing for Sagaki and under resources, our chants, there is a link to the Sagaki ceremony chants. They're a little unusual for what we usually chant. And at the same time, I think we're also going to try to have somebody pull them up and share screen while we're doing the ceremony as well. So you can just read it then. And still consider joining us for Rohatsu beginning of December. Anything else anybody can think of? All right. I guess I'll say, before I just turn my mind completely away from what is happening in the world, just stay tuned. If things are difficult, we will find a way to come together as Sangha. So just stay tuned. All right. So we're continuing on with Norman Fisher's book, The World Could Be Otherwise. And it, I don't know, perhaps any Dharma we could have studied tonight would have seemed appropriate. But somehow this ended up seeming really appropriate. So we decided to spend another week on the chapter on the perfection of generosity. And in particular, the last two sections, which focused on to be content is to be generous. I'm talking about something that, a passage by Dogen. And then also fearlessness, freedom from fear. But first of all, I wanted to open it up and see if anyone had done one of those generosity practices over the last week that wanted to say anything about what that was like, because each of Fisher's chapters, he has suggested practices for that perfection. So if you have done something like that, please go ahead and just unmute yourself and share.
I didn't do it consistently, but I did it a couple times. The one where you think about all the good things that happen to you in a day, and then pass that positive mm-hmm. energy on to somebody else who might need it. Mm. I really liked it.
Sweet. It kind of ties into the whole thing we're going to talk about tonight, where contentment, like generosity, flows from contentment. Mm-hmm. Cultivating gratitude would be helpful for that contentment. Anybody else?
Working on what I was working on last week, and that was the gift of fearlessness for myself. And now I'm on the other side. And it was lovely. It made a huge difference. It really did. On working to stay present day to day and not project years of what was coming out yesterday. I liked it a lot. It spoke to me and made a huge difference.
Ruth Ann, did you have something?
Oh, no, I didn't realize I was unmuted.
That's
no,
all right.
Sorry.
I don't have a visual of you looking like you want to talk, so I just have to guess.
Oh.
So that's fine. So why don't I start off with this reading a little section from page 46 for Fisher. And he says, he's talking about Dogen's writing the Bodhisattva Shishobo, the four practices of a bodhisattva, the four social, I think I called it the four social attitudes of a bodhisattva. And he describes generosity is the first of the four. So Dogen tells us that you practice generosity simply by not grabbing or wanting, simply by being happy to receive whatever is given. To be content is to be generous. When you are content, you will spontaneously give. You will give, Dogen writes, flowers on a distant hillside, treasures you possessed in a former life, even things that don't belong to you. You will give what you see and hear and imagine. You will give a line of scripture, a penny, a blade of grass, a particle of dust. When your generosity defies all rational bounds, people will be deeply impressed, their lives transformed. Later in the essay, Dogen writes, "To launch a boat or build a bridge is an act of giving." If you study giving closely, you see that to accept a body, that is to be born, and to give up the body to die, are both giving. So I was just so struck by that line, to be content is to be generous. So I wanted to explore contentment. What does it feel like to be content? So I was going to do a brief breakout for us to brainstorm on that, to reflect on that. What does it feel like to be content? And then if you will assign a secretary to jot down your ideas, then when we come back, we'll put them all on one sheet that we can see. So let me recreate our rooms and just take maybe about 10 minutes. All right. What does it feel like to be content? Go ahead and unmute yourself.
So how many groups do we have?
I don't know. Go ahead and share a bunch from your group.
I think a good one is being happy with the color of the grass on this side of the fence. I was wondering that.
That's good. I guess I could share with
four, we could kind of relate. We started out by thinking of what wasn't contentment, and about how right now we feel this sort of grabbing of our attention coming from the election results and things, and how that's just sort of grabbing, and it doesn't feel generous. It feels, you know, distracted, and a lot of the people in my group were saying that they could feel it. One memorable thing was in your body. It was like wearing a shirt that I don't really like. That was still the opposite. But when we tried to describe it, we were using words like serenity or peace, relaxed. And Ruth Ann was saying that it was like having a cup of tea and celebrating, embracing the moment and appreciating it.
I will share not needing anything, feeling full or like you belong, not worried about the past or the future. And not wanting to be anywhere else.
Sweet.
We had a lot of things along the lines of being present and expansive and free-flowing with a lack of self-concern. And also in general, not being stressed or preoccupied or goal-oriented.
A couple more from our group. At ease with the people that are around you, all people that are around you. No desire to fix others or improve things.
Mm. So my next question, so let's see, I'm just looking over my definition and synonyms. So definition that I looked up, satisfied with what one is or has, not wanting more or anything else. Happy, agreeable, comfortable, fulfilled, satisfied, willing, at ease. So, what kind of things keep you from feeling content, keep us from feeling content? And I'll just say, like, somebody has pointed out to me before that sometimes, sometimes my questions seem kind of negative. What keeps us from feeling content? But I think it's important to remember that the way that Buddhism approaches things is that it's our delusions that keep us that keep us from being liberated, keep us from being joyful. So in a way, our way is to look for the delusions, is to look for the dukkha, look for the dissatisfaction, look for the things that get in the way. So it's not it's not negative in a sense, in the sense that there's hope that we're actually going to be relieved from these things. So let's just brainstorm a list of things that keep us from feeling a content. I'll start with the political situation.
Worry and fear.
Well, I guess that would be about the future, largely, or what's going to happen.
What's going to happen, yeah. About the future.
Maybe feeling like you're being impeded.
You don't get as much done, so you want to get more done. Feeling of setting goals and then not reaching them.
And the opposite of that, achieving your goals, but being dissatisfied because it doesn't give you the sense of accomplishment or satisfaction that you expected of it. Mm. Never being satisfied with good enough.
Our ego.
I would say having expectations of other people that don't get met.
I recently saw something as well, some contemporary Buddhist teacher that was saying, in Buddhism we talk about the five messengers? Old age, disease, death. Maybe it's the three messengers. Anyway, she's talking about there being another one, and that is witnessing injustice. Witnessing injustice and destruction is another, that challenges our conditional content. Or, of course, experiencing injustice. That will definitely challenge our contentment.
Take on to Karen's comment, not just other people, but yourself as well, expectations for yourself.
Being in the middle of some project or I don't know, it's like I think of the way people always get those long stories about how they had to go get a permit and how difficult it was. And it seems like it's the opposite of contentment. I'm not sure exactly. I mean, it just seems like getting enmeshed in those processes.
Wanting to control things.
Mm. Being powerless to affect change.
Wanting to have more stuff.
Anger.
Judging.
Bye. to the concept of scarcity, because that takes us out of where our own boundaries are, and not allowing ourselves to detach when something is beyond our scope.
So there's an awful lot of things that keep us, awful lot of things that keep us from feeling content. I mean, in our group, when we were talking about this, it's just like, you know, why is this, is such an elusive state at times? You know, how often are we truly, truly content? So when Dogen is talking about this kind of, this contentment, that the Bodhisattva is content and generosity flows from this contentment. And to some extent, this is like, I would say, you know, this is Buddhist practice, right? This is about dukkha. It's about facing dissatisfactoriness, facing that sense of dissatisfaction or discontent. And questioning whether, is there another way? Are we basically, especially because everything changes, you know, momentarily, perhaps we feel content, but then we lose that very quickly for all of these reasons. So what can we do about that? How is it possible to be content in the midst of all of these things? I mean, that almost seems, I don't know about you, but it almost seems like an oxymoron to me. Like, you look down this list, it's like, how, despite all of these things, could you be content? What does that really mean? Any thoughts?
That maybe contentment isn't a final destination, but a direction. That we're always in flux in there, and maybe working toward, you know, letting fall away some of those things. And then it comes in sort of spurts, but that's okay. Maybe.
Even if it's only a small way, finding a way to achieve or to participate in creating the change that you desire. It may only be that you can take it part of the way, but at least get on the way to change.
For me, a lot of these things are things that take you out of being in the present moment, and contentment is very much about being in the present moment. That's me.
I'd like to add to what Sam said, seeking either, the broadest answer to that would be practice. And especially because practice helps us get in touch with our Buddha nature. And our Buddha nature is always content with what is happening because of the realization that there's no other possibility of what could be happening. At least theoretically, I haven't been there myself, but.
Yeah. I mean, try to imagine, you know, without imagining too vividly, because we don't want to take ourselves out of this present moment, but imagine, you know, the political and social situation in our country being really tumultuous and fear-provoking. You know, what I find it a very interesting, content is a very interesting word. you know, like equanimity or magnanimity or some more kind of cool spiritual aspirations I can kind of think of. But content is it is, you know, very like that somebody's saying, like, it's like wearing a comfortable shirt, you know. It's a very personal and kind of physical, it evokes kind of a personal and physical sensation. Feeling content, even if all this shit is hitting the fan. Quite a challenge. So where does the Bodhisattva's contentment come from? What is it based on? If it's not conditional, it's not based on these situations which can come and go. Did you want to say something, Ruthann?
Oh, yes, it's the equanimity. Even if a person, it might be like the Buddha and just meditating, and not in a sangha, but just knowing that the present moment, our bodies we live in, can hold that space, even if we don't need to have proof that equanimity exists in the human condition.
Well, that is an excellent lead-in to what I wanted to share then. And so I was reading this stuff and thinking about contentment and if the Bodhisattva, you know, cultivates this contentment in order to cultivate generosity. It made me think about this few stanzas from the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra in 8,000 lines. So this is one of my very favorite. It says, this is a section called Where Bodhisattvas Stand. The Bodhisattva does not stand in form, perception, or in feeling, in will or consciousness, in any skanda whatsoever. In Dharma's true nature alone he is standing. Then that is his practice of wisdom, the highest perfection. Change and no change, suffering and ease, the self and not self, the lovely and repulsive, just one suchness in this emptiness they are. So she takes not her stand on the fruit which she won, which is threefold, that of an arhat, a single Buddha, a Buddha fully enlightened. The Buddha himself was not stationed in the realm which is free from conditions, nor in the things that are under conditions, but freely he wandered without a home. Just so, without a support or a basis, a bodhisattva is standing. A position devoid of a basis has that position been called by the one who has attained liberation. So the bodhisattva is standing firmly in a position devoid of a basis. The bodhisattva's contentment is baseless. This is not something that can be understood by the mind, because it really can only be understood experientially. Because the mind is about dividing things up and making sense of things, and that's just not what this is. Because the Bodhisattva, I just love this Mahayana image, the Bodhisattva does not turn away from all of those things that make it difficult to be content. all those things that cause suffering to sentient beings. The Bodhisattva is always open, always watching, always ready to help, but they just operate in a different way from ordinary beings. So I don't know about you, but I kind of imagined for a long time and still sometimes fall into this delusion that, you know, a Bodhisattva, realized spiritual being, would somehow have awakened to a perspective where, like, worldly concerns are no longer upsetting. You know, a big perspective. We're like, well, you know, lives come and go, and sometimes there's injustice, and, you know, but it's all in a bigger picture, and it doesn't really matter that much. So that kind of sense of contentment coming through a sense of emotional removal in a way. Or perhaps awakening to some sense of conviction about the true glowing, wonderful nature of the universe, that human beings truly have hearts of gold, and the Bodhisattva knows this in a way that we don't quite know, and that's where they get their contentment and confidence. But either of those sources of contentment would be a position. It would be like the Bodhisattva being stationed in the realm free from conditions, where the Bodhisattva is not going to be helpful to living beings. So instead, the Bodhisattva way, our way, is not like this. We're neither under conditions, nor stationed in the realm free from conditions, but wander freely. So what does this mean in practice? I was wondering if maybe there's a time in which you found yourself in the past, maybe helping, encouraging someone, but you're engaged, you're caring, but you're not caught in the same way the person that you're helping is caught. That there's a certain that you have a certain freedom in that situation, that perhaps this suffering being that you're helping doesn't. Just an example that I thought of. So what does it mean to wander freely without a home? Not getting stuck under conditions, but neither removing ourselves from conditions. No right or wrong answers.
When I think about what you said, I feel like I can, when I think about times that I've been content, they're not times when I brought it about or did something to bring it about. I mean, so I was in conditions that it happened that were conducive to me being content. And I think it is unusual for me to be, to have the contentness and like bring it with me when I, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? I think that's for somebody more.
It's not easy.
It would take a lot, well, effort, but I mean, you're not supposed to be expending effort on this. It's not a place that I reside in, I guess. I wouldn't say.
I think when we talk about the contentment, we need to be content. I think there's kind of two aspects to that, that you can be content with yourself, your place in the world, your capabilities, your needs, or And from that place of contentment, you can work on the external world that is you're not content with. You're not content with suffering. You've reached that stage in which you can move on, but you are not content with the world, and you're willing to stay and help those that are discontented.
So it's kind of an inner contentment. It has to do mm-hmm. with.
My mind keeps looping back to Dogen wrote an entire fascicle titled "Deep Faith in Cause and Effect," right? And there's that way in which, you know, nothing's truly out of reach and nothing's truly in reach. So, you know, you might as well do what feels right, what seems right, and not be overly concerned with the consequences, because nothing is truly out of reach, right? Mm. Contentment in that way, like the opposite of contentment is getting caught up in the results, right? If you don't get caught up in the results, you can take action freely.
Mm. Seems like it would be kind of a state and also a kind of a balance, like a spot where you would, you know, that was like, you know, like in a teeter-totter, there's a place where you're kind of balanced. Hmm. And more of an analogy than an actual thing, but you can kind of feel it when you're not feeling tugged by all a bunch of different things. You're just kind of there. It's, I think, probably hard to maintain.
I think continuing on from what Mark said, I can only estimate the answer to your question by the opposite, because I get too involved in others' suffering and find it painful and end up making things worse. So the real question is, or the real, I guess, solution is to not get the self involved. Mm. That to me was part of what your quote from the 8,000 line Prajnaparamita was about. The ground that you're fine without is in some senses the self. Mm. And that's also in the Diamond Sutra, when the behavior of the Bodhisattva is explained, how the Bodhisattva helps others without any sense of being a self or of others being selves, without any sense of self or a.
Yeah, what one other part of this section? It's just the first two verse sections of the Perfection of Wisdom in 8,000 Lines, which overlaps a lot with the Diamond Sutra, is talks about the Bodhisattva being like, sees the world as if there's a magician who conjures up thousands of people and then cuts off thousands of heads. But the Bodhisattva recognizes that it's all an illusion, which in some ways I don't like. It's very alarming, right? Because the world's not an illusion. But if you think about that in terms of, okay, that's not saying that the world doesn't exist and that sentient beings don't suffer. If it's not saying that, what is it saying? And in what way, I don't know. It's very, I mean, for myself, I just found this, you know, preparing for this class and this Dharma study very nourishing and centering. You know, I spent the last couple weeks really engaged in planning the nonviolent civil disobedience action we did on Saturday, and, you know, getting absorbed in the project, and, you know, despite myself, getting hopeful about the results, and yet afterwards it's like, well, it's the same world. You know, so there's a certain kind of letdown and disappointment, and looking around at the things we're facing, and just a real sense of I don't know, just, you know, discontent, discouragement, and you know, in studying and preparing for this class, then thinking like, all right, this is what practice is about, right? The world in essence is not changing. I mean, even if it changes for the better substantially, we keep trying, right? It's never going to be perfect. It's never going to stay perfect. So now what can we do within? Even though things aren't great, what can we do within to be content? What is this realignment of ourselves that we can do? Cultivating that contentment, or the in the moment, or so many of the things that people have said tonight. So just to bring it back to generosity. So in that context where Dogen is talking about contentment, you know, generosity flowing from contentment, he talks about then we'll give the flowers on the distant mountainside. We can give a particle of dust. Like, what does that mean to give a particle of dust? I was kind of picturing, all right, you know, there's a sunbeam coming through the window. You see a little piece of dust in the sunlight, and maybe you have a moment of just, you know, kind of stillness and quiet and appreciation. So what does that mean to give it? You know, it's obviously it's not, you're not giving the particle of dust to anybody. If you could grab it, nobody would want it. You're not even probably giving the experience, you know, you just might describe it to somebody, but they're just going to be like, okay, great. I'm glad you saw, had a nice moment there looking at the dust in the sunlight. So what is it? You know, if it's not about a literal act of giving, a transfer of something from one being to another in a way, what does that mean? What is the giving? Is it about an attitude? What is the giving in that moment?
I think it might be the generosity that you feel about the world. And so that, like, you're being generous about more things than, you know, it's almost like the it's generosity on top of generosity. If you're thinking of, you know, like the drywall as something that you can give to somebody, you've added generosity to these things that just seems very simple, and then you've got this generosity around those things, and you're offering them. I think that's the imagination part. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's the whole book's about it, imagination.
Continuing from what Katie said, again, continuing, Fisher makes a point in terms of the contentment that I think comes in here, that you see anything you experience as a gift, but it's also not something you could ever own. So what you're doing is not receiving and giving as much as passing it on. Mm. And I think that's a good way of looking at non-attachment, which I think is a lot of what Dogen is talking about at the under generosity.
Yeah, it's like just an open-handedness. If you see everything as you're not you're not defining it as mine or identifying it with self. It just came and...
Or even identify it as ugly or worthless or, you know, like generosity would get into the things in a way, you know, the world. It's like sometimes you look at like an intersection that's like 82nd and Stark or something, and you think, well, this place is so ugly. And I think a bodhisattva maybe would be more generous around it somehow. You know, it's like, oh. I don't know.
Something came to my mind as you're talking about, you know, the open-handedness, the act of being open-handed with something in that moment, you can't be grasping it.
It almost seems like, I don't know. I mean, contentment. So he was saying contentment here, but I think perhaps gratitude also. It's almost like gratitude is generosity. It's like this, in a way, it's like the same attitude, perhaps. Giving flowers on a distant mountainside. And then he talks about, you know, launching a boat or building a bridge can be this perfection of generosity. So I wanted to just throw out there the various kinds of tasks that we do throughout the day, that, you know, what would it be like to take care of your children with this attitude? What would it be worth like to like work on software with this attitude? To create spreadsheets with this attitude. What would be different than, I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't think I'm manifesting the perfection of generosity much of the time when I'm doing stuff. Ruthann?
I think when we can slip away from the smaller self, then we can kind of embrace not defining a sense of purpose, but just flowing with it, almost like, in a way, being a ghost, going beyond boundaries because you're detached. When I think of Thich Nhat Hanh, 15 years during the Vietnam War, never took sides, but he was that balance there for, of course, his country, but his, and witness. So it's kind of like letting happen what's happening, but, you know, letting the bigger self remind us of our formlessness.
Thank you. And maybe that sense of that whatever it is, the work, the skill, that again, if we're getting the self out of the way, we're not going to have that sense of like, I am so skilled, I am so generous, I am working so hard in order to bestow this benefit on other people. But kind of participating, it actually made me feel more positive, I guess, about like my action on Saturday. When I think back to how I wanted it to go and how I tried to make it go, and it, you know, when I'm just thinking about myself and the role that I played in it, it feels very constrained But when I think about, you know, the part I played, that it unfolded and I played a role and I wasn't in charge of it and I just helped facilitate it unfold, then I'm like, oh, you know, because I've had people say it was wonderful and they enjoyed participating, and well, maybe there was generosity flowing there. All right, well, offer the merit of our study together to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. All right, thank you for your act of generosity in being here tonight.
Thank you, everybody. Take care.
You too.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
Thank you.